This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJSSD, on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. All right, well, the rent strike got busted on this Monday, September 25th. So I've got that for you today, and then more stuff on the hospital closure, the Eugene Hospital being closed. But some good news, Eugene Area Gleaners is looking for people for harvesting free fruit right now because it's the fall and there's free fruit everywhere. So if you go to eugeneareagleaners.com, you can find out about that. And I've got an interview with Brandy Collier from Eugene Area Gleaners at eugeneareagleaners.com. So this is from my notes from Candace King's September 25th forced eviction. When Eugene police escorted moving pods to remove the last of her belongings and protesters from 8th and Almaden. So social media had been reporting increased police activity, and I saw police there on two occasions a week before. So I was notified Monday morning, and I showed up there at 7:45 at 8th and Almaden to police tape on both 8th and Almaden all the way to the other side on 9th and Almaden, or Almaden and Broadway. And so the pods came almost right away, right after that, while the troops rallied next door and tried to retrieve their belongings from police with various levels of success there, mostly failure to get their belongings back. Few people showed up, maybe 20. Half a dozen were blocking the trucks leaving on Almaden and Broadway. At one point, a woman came out and said the police and the haranguing of the police was disturbing her autistic child, so the activist moved to the other side of the blockade on 8th and Almaden. But cherries and berries stayed. And I watched an officer grab a foil sandwich from his car. They're parked right there on the police line. So later, a few protesters returned and stayed quiet, much more quiet. A person stood by themselves in the way in the middle of Almaden and Broadway, at Broadway, and said they wouldn't move, so cops mobilized a task force to arrest them that came at them until they moved at the last minute. This only took a few seconds, but my reaction was it looked very expensive for very little result. A pickup truck with belongings screeched their tires after protesters tried to stop them. A man was told if he crossed the line again, he would be arrested. Activists claim a comrade was thrown down by police and injured their knee. Drones were seen, and when I first showed up at 8th and Almaden at 7:45, on the Almaden side, on the 8th side of 8th and Almaden, police returned a bike to a homeless tent person that was living out there. Before they rousted them during the eviction. Later, neighbors brought coffee while police wrapped it up. At about 10:30, everyone dispersed, dejected, to reconnoiter later. Alright, so that's my report from that. So, a little comment and a little research I did on the hospital closure. We send more tax dollars to the Fed. The state of Oregon and most states, almost all states, send more tax dollars to the Fed than they get back in services. And where does that money go? Almost $1 billion a year in defense contracts in Oregon. So that money comes back from the Fed to be invested in defense spending that only benefits a small amount goes to Oregon. Most goes to the hands of prime shareholders like Dick Cheney and his band of thieves. So what I'm saying is states pay more to the Fed than they get back. The Fed spends almost $1 billion a year on defense contracts in Oregon here that mostly goes to war profiteers somewhere else. Can we just tell the federal government that we don't need their defense contracts? It will be rough, but I think we can get along without them, even if we pension off defense workers. Then just cut payments by the amount of the defense contracts. I know this has been tried by individuals, but what if a whole state did it? What are they going to do, cut off services? Of course, they would sue with interest, but how would they collect? Just declare bankruptcy like corporations. What are they going to do? Repossess a city with no hospital and no services. Can we at least ask our representatives to explore this so we could just put the money that the state owes the Fed in an escrow account and say, okay, as soon as you start using this money that you spend here on defense contracts, as soon as you start spending that on social programs, we will pay this money that we have this escrow account. We have the intent to pay it, but we just don't want you to waste our money and just give it to your cronies. So please research this stuff yourself. You'll find it's even more obscene than I could describe under FCC regulations here. Use your own brain at all times and practice critical thinking. Do not remove this tag under penalty of law. Please disperse and return to your homes immediately. And please, no wagering. All these shows are archived. All Talk Is Cheaps are archived on radioforall.net. A little bit thing on show quality. I'm having some file management problems with Audacity, so I'm sorry that there's some glitches. But I'm working on cleaning that up. I just need to spend more time. And I played music over one of the speakers of the hospital debacle last week, so I'm going to replay that for you without music underlying her, hopefully. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. On Friday, September 15th, there was a Save Eugene's Hospital town hall meeting at the International Firefighters Association Union Hall in Eugene, Oregon. Neighbors, patients, and local first responders discussed the negative impacts closing University District Hospital will have on the Eugene community. You can get your questions answered and find out how you can help Save Eugene's Only Hospital at SaveEugene'sHospital.com. That's Save Eugene's Hospital.
Hi, my name is Jocelyn Wenzel. I use she/her pronouns, and I'm representing NAACP as the Healthcare Workforce Development Coordinator, as well as the interim managing director. I have a couple kind of statistics or facts that I wanted to mention real quick, so some of you looking down, that's why. I think I reiterate the concern and points that are raised already, and I wanted to point out that this hospital, as I think was alluded to, serves a population of 170,000 residents, and there's approximately 25,000 emergency room visits and 7,000 admissions annually. So this closure would obviously leave a significant gap in healthcare services leading to increased mortality and morbidity rates. I say interim manager because I'm also about to enter my third year of med school. And as was mentioned by our firefighter and EMS representative here, that you say time is muscle, they also say time is brain. And so, you know, I know we've been in the middle of a pandemic, but something that comes to mind for me is when you have something acute, like a stroke or a heart attack. And so when we're looking at the UD hospital, and looking at the population that it served versus having to drive elsewhere, if you have somebody that goes to UD Hospital and is looking at a much shorter wait time than Riverbend, right now the wait times over there are 8 to 12 hours, maybe there's hope for them. But if you look at a heart attack, for instance, if there's no response within the first 4 hours, you're looking at long-term complications like arrhythmia, heart failure, cardiogenic shock, and or death. And so the thing that worries me about that, obviously death, the thing that worries me about that is by trying to cut corners and do what is in the interest of an organization, they are looking at increasing the burden on the provider of that organization. So because not being able to respond in a short amount of time and help people in an acute setting will lead to chronic illness, you're going to just look at an increasing number of hospital visits, right? So you're going to have people revisiting because now they have a newfound arrhythmia, they have heart failure, they have shock, and shock-like symptoms under sequela. And then when you look at stroke, similarly, if there's something called the golden hour, and if you're not able to respond in that first hour, you look at radiating necrosis and death of surrounding brain tissue from the site of emboli or stroke. And so that concerns me. The other thing that concerns me is knowing that the U of O is serving 20,000 students, so where are those students gonna go now? I've done work with suicide prevention hotlines, and I just think of how mental illness and suicide is super high among students who are in a high stress environment. And when you're in a state of crisis, if you have to walk around the corner and say, I need help, it's going to be a lot different than if you have to drive 15, 30 minutes away and wait 4 to 8 to 12 hours in a waiting room, and it's reinforced to you that you don't matter and nobody cares about you because you're just waiting, you're just a number, and who's going to notice if you leave the waiting room, because that just means somebody else will get it faster. That's not what you want to be told when you're in crisis and you're trying to say, I do need help. I also think, you know, as a med student, I've done medical interpreting my pre-med years, and I wonder about BIPOC and ESL patients coming in and the health staff recognizing, oh, this person needs one more resource. Well, I'm just going to turn them out to the other department and make them wait a little bit longer because now I have to call in an interpreter. I don't have time for that. I'm going to deal with this other emergency case. And they're just saying their stomach hurts from my rudimentary Spanish that I can understand. Oh, wait, it's not just their stomach hurting. It's a dissecting triple, you know, abdominal aneurysm or something like that. And so I think often things can get lost in translation. Often, unfortunately, in a crisis, people, if there's more resource needed, people will either make that person wait longer, or they will get a compromise on resources. They'll say, who speaks Spanish, just get any staff member. And that's not the kind of care that people deserve. So my concern from this is, how will students, BIPOC, and other ethnic minority groups, and underrepresented, underserved populations, like the unhoused population in Eugene, be affected by this? And I mean, as you already heard, it's pretty scary. It's going to have a huge effect. I could go on, but there's people with much better medical expertise than I to speak after me, so I'm not up there.
I'm Jenna Paul. I am a nurse. I work at Peace Health. I'm on the executive team. I'm vice chair of the union executive team. I'm also an advisor member of the statewide labor cabinet. But primarily, I'm a nurse. I've worked at one hospital for almost 34 years. I worked there before it was Peace Health. It was just the Sacred Heart Medical Center, and then it became Peace Health, and then eventually it became Peace Health Sacred Heart University District, or whatever. Anyway, it's ED, and that's where I work. And when we were told that this was going to close, we had some kind of hints that something big was going to happen. But we kind of thought it was going to be down the road a little bit, 2 or 3 years away. And then we found out that this was happening. And quite frankly, it was a gut punch. Because we had had nothing, no warning from our management, no warning from anyone in leadership at Sacred Heart. And I mean, in my department, we are a family. We have worked hard to build that relationship. Because we don't have any resources outside of our department. We're not like Riverbend where we can call and get help from the ICU or get help from labor and delivery or whatever we need. We are it. And so we rely on each other and we are very close. That's going to be part of it. We've been assured that, and I see the numbers of open positions at Riverbend, and so I understand that most, if not all, of the medical staff at University District will have jobs at Riverbend. They're not necessarily the jobs we want, but they're jobs. We will not be unemployed. We will eventually be okay. We'll land on our feet. All of the staff there will mostly be okay. We may not be happy with what we have, but we'll be okay. But you know who's not going to be okay? Our patients, our community. The people that we see every day are not going to be okay. When this was first announced, one of our regular patients was in the department at the time that Jim McGovern, who is the interim CEO, I think, for Riverbend. Anyway, he's the face of Peace Health in the news right now. And he was in the department. And this patient was there, and she was having one of her episodes that we're used to dealing with, and she's just, you know, one of our regulars. And she saw him, and she said, you don't have any plans for me. You don't give a damn about me. And then she just started crying. And he had nothing to say to her because she was right. They don't care about our community. They care about their bottom line. These are people that are making the decisions. They're in Vancouver, and they're moving widgets around on a board. They're in a boardroom. And sure, in a boardroom, when you only have numbers in front of you, it probably makes sense to close University District. But that's not involving people. That's not involving the community. And like I said, Peace Health does not care about this community. They care about their bottom line, and they care about staying, you know, making their bonuses for their upper executives. We've had discussions with Riverbend, and like Chelsea said, Riverbend ER is not ready for our patient population. We are the primary intake for the behavioral health unit for most of Lane County. Yes, we see a lot of mental health patients that we don't admit, but many of them come in acute crisis, and that requires a safe environment. In many cases, a medical room with you know, hoses to the monitors and oxygen tubing and sharp things in the rooms, those are not okay for these mental health patients who maybe want to hurt themselves or want to hurt other people, or they're just psychotic and they don't understand their environment. We have safe rooms in our secure area, and they have two at Riverbend, and they're not, my understanding, I haven't seen them, my understanding from the people that work there is they're not that safe. So they, we don't have a good answer for our patient population. There was no preparation at Riverbend for the physical environment until after they started making the announcements to the staff, because they didn't want staff to start leaving their positions and leaving them even more short-staffed. That is the rationale for not saying anything, and that's unacceptable. So now we're looking at remodeling the ER in some way and taking medical beds away for our mental health patients, which, okay, let's make a safe area, great, but what about all of the medical patients that are backing up too? There is no acceptable answer to what Peace Health is doing to our community.
Hi, I'm Sonia Hancock. I work at University District Hospital as a mental health technician. And I'm also a shop steward for the SEIU Union 49. I've been a CNA for approximately 26 years, and of two of those years I've worked for Peace Health. SEIU Local 49 strongly opposes Peace Health's decision to close University District Hospital, as it raises concerns about healthcare workers, our patients, and our community. The lack of details or assurances for healthcare workers is troubling, especially with the high demand for our services. This closure would set a dangerous precedent and hampers health equality, leaving Eugene without an emergency department that has traditionally served the more vulnerable population than Springfield. The closure may leave patients without adequate care. Peace Health claims that Riverbend can absorb University District's patients, but Riverbend already sees a high volume of patients and has extended wait time in the emergency department. By Peace Health's own admission, the closure of University District is being fueled by financial consideration, not community ones. Peace Health should honor its promise to Eugene community by not closing this essential and only emergency service facility in the city. We expect more from a mission-driven nonprofit organization. Thank you.
So just to give you a little more background, we received notification that Peace Health was planning on closing the majority of University District in Eugene 6 days after we ratified our contract. So the nurses have been bargaining with Peace Health since December. We finally came to an agreement on our nursing contract, and 6 days later, they're like, oh, by the way, we're closing one of your hospitals. So what this includes is our University District ED, our ACE unit, so it's an acute care for the elderly, our rehab units, and our flow pool. So they put in a waiver for the state to close all of those units and keep our behavioral health unit open as a satellite to Riverbend. They've given the state until September 20th to come back with a decision. So if the state decides that they're going to deny this waiver, they basically threaten that they're going to close the behavioral health unit as well. Yeah.
Where?
Yeah, so if Peace Health is not given permission to close the units that they want to close, they will close the only inpatient behavioral health unit we have in this county. Our patients are going to have to go to, what was the closest, is Salem, I believe?
Coos Bay.
Coos Bay, Portland. Yeah, so during a meeting with one of the executives from University District, when we asked that question, like, what's going to happen to these patients? Like, well, they're going to have to be transported out of the community. Great. I will come to that. So this is a pretty expedited timeline. Just this morning, I was reading about a hospital, so I believe it's at Mount Sinai in New York. They were talking about how they were planning on closing one of their hospitals as well. And they also have a multi-year plan to close their hospital. Not a 60-day surprise for closing your hospital. So that's kind of where we are at this point. So
it's harvest time, and Brandy Collier of Eugene Area Gleaners says people with backyard orchards want you to come and get it. Gleaners harvest wasted fruit from trees on family farms and create community while feeding their members. She says they have to keep it in the family because food safety regulations prevent many organizations from taking food with a little character.
Better than the cans that you buy in the stores because it doesn't have the lining on the aluminum, and you know what's going in your food. I think for commercially processed food, you can have so many spider legs per million, but when you're canning your own, you know what's in there. So we would love to have more opportunities for teaching canning and having more canning bees. We just honestly need the volunteers available to organize it.
Who do you get fruit from? What's the range? I mean, these are family farms that you get fruit from. I was just looking over here on 42nd Street. There's a sign that somebody put out saying, you go ahead and come and pick pears and apples. So are these registered commercial farms that you're getting them from, or families, or
who are you getting them from? Most of our gleans happen in people's backyards. We don't get a whole lot of commercial gleans. I'm not sure why that is, but we're open to it. Yeah, but most of our donors have just like one or two trees in their backyard, and you know, some of the most generous people are the people that have very little themselves. We don't get a whole lot of commercial donation or support. We do have a couple of commercial donors like Winco, Oral Wheat, Bread Stop, and Elegant Elephant have been huge supporters and donors of their day olds. But mostly what we have is excess produce from gleans like Hortons Organic and Organic Redneck. Other than that, just whatever we have goes to the drop sites.
All right, and so then you donate to the food banks, the local food banks? Who do you donate to?
We donate to our members. We found due to the restrictions in what food banks can and cannot accept that they can't take a lot of what we have. A lot of what we have is ripe right now. That's when people typically call us, is when things are already falling off the vine. So we have 1,200 registered gleaners, and I think we're up to 5 pickup sites throughout Eugene and Springfield. So the people who go to the glean take as much as they want or need, and then anything extra goes to the drop site for distribution to the other gleaners.
How do you volunteer?
Well, there's a variety of ways to volunteer. Anyone who's a registered gleaner is more than welcome to come to the drop site. we accept anybody and everybody who wants to be a gleaner. We keep track of income, and we see that most of our gleaners are people who fall below or way below the poverty line in Lane County. But a lot of people just join for the camaraderie and to help others. So we ask that everyone who is a gleaner volunteers once a month. They can hang a flyer. They can do computer work. They can lead gleans. They can go on gleans. There's so many things that needs done because nobody is getting paid. And it's hard to do all the things when you're not a dedicated 8-to-5 employee for a place.
All right, and so what is it like at the gleaning sites? It's kind of a party, right?
Yes, it is so much fun, honestly. I'm not canning this year due to some physical limitations, but it's so much fun, especially the ones where you're allowed to bring your children. And then we can explain to the kids, you know, how important this is and how nice it is that they're helping people. Because not only are we helping the people who are receiving the food, we're helping the people who have, you know, whatever in their backyard. We're helping save that food from becoming waste, going into a yard bin, sent off to who knows where. And it's just nice to be in a group with one common goal. We don't discuss anything but food preservation, the task at hand. So there's very little petty bickering or squabbling. Like, everybody is in there for one common goal and one common goal only. And it's just so much fun, and it's so nice to be outside in the sunshine, getting free, no-spray produce. I mean, you can't buy that in a store.
Yeah, so do you have any funny stories, though, from out there? I used to volunteer for this guy. I don't know if you've heard of him. He was called Rhapsody in Green down in Los Angeles, and he would call you up once a month. You would be on his site, on his email list, and he would have different things. Some of them were fruit gleaning, but they were like river cleanups and stuff like that. A different one each month, and he, you know, we would find strange stuff out there on some of those things. Do you have any strange stories or funny stories from the gleaning site?
Yeah, I am always surprised at what I need to tell volunteers, and I'm not sure how many of them is funny or sad. One of the more poignant stories that I remember is a gentleman who had owned his home for, 50, 60 years. He was a cancer patient, and he was so excited to have us out, and he would tell us all about his plums, how they were so good for diabetics, and he was just very excited about his plums. And he warned us, you know, there's bees, don't knock on the door, I'm undergoing treatments. So we'd hear from him every year. And one year he came out because he was still in treatment, wrapped only in a sheet because he was so excited to come out and to see people. And he was enjoying our conversation through the window. And I guess he forgot that he was only wrapped in a very thin sheet. So we very kindly, you know, suggested that we talk through an open window so that he could sit down and relax. But it was, you know, it's so sad. We came to make this connection with this person, and we really enjoyed going every year, and we just don't hear from him anymore. So I know that he must have passed on. But I mean, that was kind of humorous, that, you know, he was just this excited man coming out in his sheet. He looked like Socrates coming to talk about his plums. He was a sweetheart.
All right, and so you said you're constantly talking fruit and talking about plants and fruits. Do you have a facility? Do you have classes at your facility?
We do not have a facility. We've got no brick and mortar location. The pickup sites that we have are volunteers' homes. They've opened up their homes. One lady even let us build a shed on her front yard so that our gleaners would have a location where they could go to drop extra produce and pick up extra produce. We're aiming for a brick and mortar location at some point, but we need to explore funding, and we've been looking at trying to find grant writers, but honestly, the volunteer, sometimes people volunteer and they don't always follow through. So we're constantly struggling, like everybody else is, with volunteer commitment time.
All right, and so what does a membership get you, though?
So you you get access to the Facebook group, the email list. You can go to any of the drop sites and pick up extras. And, you know, it's an amazing community. If you have any questions about food preservation, we have an equipment library. So if you need to borrow a canner, you know, there's one there. If you need to borrow an apple picker, we have one available. The equipment library is phenomenal. The knowledge library is infinite. I am so impressed every day with what people know and what they're willing to share. We even have people that, you know, request and offer rides to Gleans. It's just everything you could think of that you would need to go out and glean and process from beginning to end.
All right, so if you want to volunteer or you have a harvest that you want to share, you go to Eugene Area Gleaners.
EugeneAreaGleaners.com.
All right, anything else you want to say?
Well, we're booked up through the end of September for Gleans, but we are always looking for new volunteers to help us out at Gleans so that we can take on more. And we're looking forward to late fall harvests of vegetables, pumpkins, gourds, squash, carrots, apples. So I hope to meet some new faces this year.
That was Brandy Collier with Eugene Area Gleaners. You can find out more about Eugene Area Gleaners at EugeneAreaGleaners.com. For KPW News, I'm DJ SSD.
Brought to you by Crazy Larry MD's Procedure Emporium, where they're crazy for your health care. Hi, I'm Crazy Larry MD from Crazy Larry MD's Procedure Emporium, where we're crazy for your health care. We guarantee to charge you only 100% of what your insurance pays after they pay it or whatever's higher with approved collateral. Come on down, we'll give you a free ride in my Bugatti. Our internationally sought surgeon will have you for dinner once you pay your bill. Free vasectomy by Rabbi Cutswell with every operation. This week's special, open heart surgery, just $50,000, sutures not included. At Crazy Larry MD's, call for the latest location. I'm crazy for your health care. We'll be right back.
Silly human, silly human. And it's really great to be here in Boston. This is something from our new album, Drama. And it's called Into the Lens. We'll be right back. There's a gentleman standing over here. I think you all know him. His name's Steve Howe. He's going to play for you. Thank you.